This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's top general warns about the repercussions of the growing military partnership between the U.S. and Israel in the Persian Gulf region. Iraq's top court rejects a demand by cleric Muqtada al-Sadr to dissolve parliament as the deadlock over the formation of a new government continues. And the Russian President Vladimir Putin says the West is failing to isolate Moscow with sanctions, but is undermining the global economy instead. Thanks for joining us. Iran's top general warns of ramifications of the growing military partnership between the U.S. and the Israeli regime in the Persian Gulf region. Major General Mohammad Baghari says the U.S. military has tried to make up for the withdrawal of its warships from the region by connecting the, quote, child-killer Israeli military to the U.S. Central Command. He said the cooperation will provide the Israeli regime with America's spying facilities. The chairman of the chiefs of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces noted that the partnership will increase threats to Iran. Baghari, however, has warned regional countries hosting American and Israeli forces against any threat to Iran's security. He underlined that the Islamic Republic has always urged its neighbors not to rely on foreigners for regional security. Meanwhile, Iran Army's ground forces are holding two-day drills to increase their combat readiness in the face of new threats. Ehtedar, or Strength 1401, maneuvers have begun in the city of Nasrabad, central province of Isfahan. Second Brigadier General Amir Cheshak says the Army's infantry, armored artillery, and electronic warfare divisions are participating in the drills. He says the different units will assess their coordination during hybrid operations and will show their creative indigenous tactics, among other skills. The military official also said the forces are trying to practice based on real-life world battles. He added that the drills are both offensive and defensive in nature. The Albanian Prime Minister has announced severing diplomatic ties with Iran, citing an investigation into a recent cyber attack, which he blamed on Tehran.
The Council of Ministers has decided with immediate effect to end diplomatic relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. An official notice of this decision has been sent to the embassy of the Islamic Republic, asking that all the diplomatic, technical, administrative, and security staff leave the territory of the Republic of Albania within 24 hours.
Edi Rama further said that his country's, quote, extreme response is fully proportionate to the gravity and risk of the cyber attack. Iran has not reacted to the decision, but the relation between Tehran and Tirana has been tense since the Balkan nation provided safe havens to an anti-Iran terror group, MKO. Albania has been providing staunch support for the MKO, which has conducted numerous assassinations and bombings against Iranian statesmen and civilians since the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The OFAM group has also been delisted by the European Union and the UN on the terror list. Earlier political analyst Osi Zhezheksi joined us to give his perspective on Albania's move to sever diplomatic ties with Iran. He says that Israel is to blame for Tehran's decision, which comes as Tel Aviv is seeking to derail the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 Iran deal.
The latest and unexpected and a big scandal that happened today in Tirana, Albania, this event has probably been ordered, as always, by Israel, and most probably is related to the Iran nuclear deal. Whenever Israel wants to do some major attacks and provocation against Iran, but even the Americans, they use Albanians. In 2018, many Mujahideen sources in Albania announced that MEK was planning to stage a fake terrorist attack in Albania in cooperation with Israeli Mossad, and for this they were going to blame Iran, and they wanted to use this in order to give to Trump an excuse to attack Iran. But fortunately, the president and prime minister of Albania were put into notice about what Mossad and MEK was planning to do, and fortunately, nothing happened.
Iraq's Supreme Court rules out dissolving the country's federal parliament, a key demand of cleric Muqtada al-Sadr that sparked deadly unrest in recent weeks. In a statement, the court said that it does not have the constitutional authority to suspend the assembly. This said the legislature must dissolve itself in a case it is not carrying out its duties. The Supreme Judicial Council, Iraq's top judicial body, had also earlier expressed its inability to do so. The political turmoil gripped the Arab country after Sadr failed to form a government after winning most seats in the last election. Later, Sadr's supporters stormed parliament twice and launched a sit-in to demand the suspension of parliament and new elections. Last month, Sadr announced that he was quitting politics. That escalated the situation further. Nearly 24 people were killed before the cleric asked his supporters to end violence and evacuate the capital's green zone. The Russian President Vladimir Putin says that it will be impossible for the West to isolate Russia, even with the toughest of his sanctions.
However, the epidemic has been replaced by other challenges, also global in its nature, threatening the entire world. I'm referring to the sanctions fever of the West, its blatant, aggressive attempts to impose patterns of behavior on other countries, to deprive them of their sovereignty and to bend them to its will.
Putin said that Russia is facing economic, financial, and technological aggression from the West, but the economic situation has stabilized in general. He noted that Russia is looking for more opportunities in markets in Middle Eastern countries, Iran in particular. The Russian president blamed the West for undermining the global economy by trying to impose its hegemony. The Russian president made the remarks at an economic forum in the far eastern city of Vladivostok. The West and its allies have imposed a host of sweeping sanctions against Russia since the beginning of the war in Ukraine. We reached out to political analyst Marcus Papadopoulos for comments. He believes the West would face dire consequences for taking on Russia in an economic fight.
Taking on Russia in an economic fight was always going to be immensely harmful to the ordinary man and woman in the West. And the consequences of that are as such. That an impending economic catastrophe is about to strike Britain and the rest of Europe. And even though time is still on Europe's side to avert this catastrophe, if that catastrophe is not averted, then I believe that what Europe will witness in peacetime, that is, will be unprecedented. Because tens of millions of Europeans, including Britons, face the possibility of falling into poverty, of becoming homeless, of losing their jobs, and also of dying because of exposure to the cold elements, because they will not be able to afford to put their central heating system on.
Newly appointed British Prime Minister Liz Truss faces grilling from the opposition Labour Party during the first session of Parliament after taking over the Tory leadership. Truss sparred with Labour leader Keir Starmer on the country's energy and cost of living crises. Truss said that her cabinet will make sure the new energy plan supports businesses and people. She pledged to use more domestic oil, gas, and nuclear energy to deal with the current crisis. The Premier said that her cabinet needs to address energy costs for businesses, adding that she is against imposing a windfall tax on energy companies to help tackle the price hike. Britain has been dealing with soaring gas prices and a subsequent inflation. Other European countries are also feeling the strain of record energy prices due to a halt in Russian gas supplies. Europe accuses Russia of using energy as a weapon in retaliation for Western sanctions. The Seoul Defense Dialogue discussed avenues of international cooperation, and South Korea implements a hardline approach to Pyongyang. Frank Smith has more from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
The Seoul Defense Dialogue Security Forum addressed the North Korea issue Wednesday as leading military strategists grappled for a coherent policy toward Pyongyang. In South Korea, President Yoon Suk-yeol's hard line involves strengthening the U.S. alliance and bolstering military capabilities, including a potential preemptive strike.
Kill chain will pre-detect North Korea's nuclear missile launch and be able to interfere with it, blocking any incoming nuclear attacks. And in order to prevent the worst case, we are intensively organizing the defense budget and developing military strategies to prepare a military retaliation.
President Yoon promised to normalize operations of the U.S. anti-ballistic missile system, THAAD, which was deployed in 2017, with new equipment brought in late Sunday night in an attempt to foil local protesters. Yoon has said he would like to deploy more THAAD missile batteries. At the forum, President Yoon's hard line was echoed by Japan.
There could be a lot of sanctions that would be imposed together with other countries, and there could be certain measures which some countries can do unilaterally, and it's a kind of a combination, but we have to share the same goal of urging North Korea to accept the terms. We have to figure out where it hurts most for the North Koreans.
Several forum speakers stressed coordinated sanctions, which have so far failed, yet offered few alternatives. Settling the issue of North Korea's nuclear and missile programs and ending sanctions against Pyongyang will require bringing North Korea to the negotiating table. But so far, the U.S. and its allies, South Korea and Japan, appear unwilling to provide much incentive for North Korea to re-enter talks. Also on Wednesday, the nuclear envoys of the U.S., South Korea and Japan met in Tokyo to coordinate strategies seeking to denuclearize North Korea. The U.S. repeated its offer to meet unconditionally with North Korea, while U.S.-led unilateral and U.N. Security Council sanctions remain in place. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Social media platforms have recently emerged as a lifeline for many who seek to draw attention to challenges that are downplayed or underreported by mainstream media, including the plight of Palestinians. However, the exclusion of Palestinian voices from Western media narratives is gaining momentum. Tech giant Meta, the owner of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Twitter, is being linked more and more to the suppression of pro-Palestine content.
In the absence of outlets for oppressed Palestinians to resist and tell their narratives, social media are one of the few tools at their disposal to counter Israeli disinformation campaigns. However, social media platforms, which were once heralded as means of free speech and liberation, have been complicit in the suppression and silencing of pro-Palestinian voices, a practice dubbed digital apartheid by some. Israel's attempts to erase the humanity of the Palestinians or whitewash its crimes against them continue unabated. Facebook's massive media monopoly, rebranded as Meta to save face from years of controversies surrounding it, is one of Israel's favorite ways to censor and control political debate in Palestine. Now, in a fresh crackdown on Palestinian social media content, several platforms owned by Meta have targeted accounts of dozens of pro-Palestinian individuals, including activists, writers, and journalists. Facebook and WhatsApp have closed many accounts for covering Israel's August bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip and reporting on Palestinian civilian deaths.
What they try to do internationally, the Western powers, is to control the narrative. Unfortunately, we live at the age of shameless propaganda, and that's what we have to fight mostly as journalists.
The targeted individuals have raised the alarm over what they describe as unjust suppression of their content. They say the social networking platforms have cited breaching their publishing standards for the crackdown.
I posted a number of photos detailing the civilians killed by Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip on August 17. They then accuse me of breaching the publishing standards. But the real reason is clear. It's about cleansing the platforms of Palestinian content.
My first warning came when I published a photo of Adam Nablusi, who was killed by occupying forces. I was suspended from posting or commenting for 30 days while my posts were reviewed. I believe that the closure of my WhatsApp account is about stopping me publishing my journalistic work.
This is not the first time that pro-Palestine groups have been targeted by those firms. In May of last year, during Israel's war in Gaza, WhatsApp blocked the accounts of over 100 to censor the reality of its aggression. Over the years, Facebook has repeatedly removed the pages of Palestinian news organizations, and its sister company, Instagram, has been accused of muting posts on Palestine. The mounting evidence suggests an institutionalized policy of targeting content that reflects the Palestinian narrative.
Sana Social, an initiative that records and monitors the suspension of Palestinian content and accounts on social media platforms, announced that Meta had mainly targeted activists based in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Nida Basumi, the media coordinator at Sana Social, says there has been an agreement in place between the Israeli regime and major social media networks since 2016 over controlling Palestinian content. She also pointed to double standards imposed by Meta when it comes to censoring content.
It launched an intensive campaign against Palestinian journalists by restricting social media posts reporting breaking news from Palestine. But it did not restrict the Israeli forces' video showing them raiding Nablus and killing Palestinians.
Israel and its allies are not only pressuring big tech to silence pro-Palestinian voices from outside. Facebook's Oversight Board, an independent body tasked with deliberating on the platform's content decisions, includes a former official at an Israeli ministry cyber unit, Emmy Palmer. She personally lobbied for the removal of thousands of pieces of Palestinian content from Facebook. Since the very beginning, social media companies have collaborated with centers of power in the U.S. They even collaborated with the U.S. Department of Defense on surveillance and big data analysis. So it's not just a few influential pro-Israeli voices co-opting social media companies into silencing pro-Palestinian voices. The industry itself is rotten to its core.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Yani
Bazaar
Following the success of the first industrial park in 1890, more of these parks began mushrooming all over the world. Industrial zones are viewed as an effective way of increasing synergies between industrial activities through sharing resources. Furthermore, they drive commerce and business for greater economic stability among global and domestic participants. These days, industrial parks are key engines for economic growth and financial security.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the program that analyzes industries, markets, profits, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we are going to explore Iran's industrial parks. We wanted to see how they are established and operated and who the major players are in this field. Plus, we will examine why industrial parks and estates are so important to the national economy. So, let's get started.
To become more familiar with industrial parks, we visited one on the outskirts of the capital city of Tehran. It was originally launched roughly 3 decades ago and has since grown into one of the most densely packed industrial zones of the province. Spanning some 260 hectares of land, this establishment is home to hundreds of producers active in several production fields. So how does this establishment work, and what makes industrial parks attractive to businesses? One answer is that these zones offer unique services that support investors and companies. However, one of the most important advantages is the large plots of land fitted with the necessary infrastructure for production and distribution. Each year, thousands of tons of products are produced here. Industrial parks also provide vast amounts of space to store goods, and some have their own airports and ground terminals for cargo distribution. But that's not all. Many industrial parks are also situated in economic zones, which offer numerous benefits to businesses while cutting some of their development costs. Additionally, there are other advantages to operating in industrial zones for manufacturers who are also exporters. These include softer customs regulations and certain tax exemptions, among others. As a result, exports from these areas have also contributed millions of dollars to the national economy.
Industrial zones are ideal catalysts for industrialization and economic development. They provide the infrastructure necessary for small and medium-sized enterprises to grow. These parks have emerged as the new super tonic for the unprecedented growth of urban business and commerce. But have you ever wondered how an industrial park is created? It's no easy task. Planning and launching one of these zones is considered an industry of its own.
We caught up with a holding company specializing in planning and developing industrial parks in Tehran province. We wanted to see how these establishments are shaped, executed, and launched. It all starts with targeting the appropriate plot of land. This holding purchases the necessary land, which sometimes can cover hundreds of hectares. This entity carries out its activities under the National Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization. This organization is affiliated with the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. So, the holding links various industries with government executive branches and helps remove barriers for manufacturing units. Plus, it connects investors to businesses while handling some of the government's bureaucratic processes for national and international investors. One of the main goals of creating these parks is to support local production and increase exports. Doing so will save the country millions on importing similar goods that can be domestically produced. At its core, an industrial park is a portion of a city or land zoned for industrial use rather than residential or commercial needs. These places can be home to a host of industries and might have oil refineries, power plants, ports, and so much more.
The parks serve another purpose too. They are also meant to protect the environment, as industrial parks collect factories and other manufacturing facilities in an area outside of town. Moreover, these zones foster technological learning and innovation while creating jobs. Plus, such sites provide intermediary support for institutions while promoting interdisciplinary networks.
Their activities support market expansion and reach by providing services to companies that help businesses stay relevant in the competitive market. For instance, this holding company has sponsored various national and international exhibitions where companies in industrial zones can participate. They offer dozens of types of services to small and medium-sized businesses both inside industrial parks and outside these zones. It might be interesting to know that nearly every province of Iran has at least one of these holding companies that establishes industrial parks. For example, the holding company for Tehran province has already established numerous estates and sites over the years, but its activities haven't stopped there. As part of its future vision, this holding hopes to expand its activities, and one of its projects is launching more industrial parks focusing on knowledge-based production. Generally speaking, the number of industrial parks has increased by over 270-fold since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Presently, there are over 1,000 industrial parks and zones scattered across the country. Over 830 of this total has been handed over to industrial units. That's all based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. All things considered, Iran's industrial zones have a bright and promising future while offering lucrative investment opportunities with big profits. The construction industry has continuously had a series of revolutions throughout history. Technological advancements have influenced the construction sector too, from durable concrete in ancient structures to smart windows that automatically open and close based on light exposure. Some materials evolved with time, others are new to the industry and address natural disasters while reflecting changing lifestyles and environmental values. Still, other materials are born out of a need to reduce construction costs. In a nutshell, structures and their materials are the building blocks of society and economic expansion. To understand the enormity of the construction industry, we visited the 22nd Annual International Building and Construction Exhibition in Tehran. Because the exhibition was sprawled over nearly 4 hectares of land, one day is not nearly enough for visitors to see the entire expo, so it ran for 3 days. This exhibition is one of the most important events in its industry. We caught up with a few companies at the exhibit to see what they were offering. Our first stop was at a booth held by a company that makes ceramic tiles. They also export their products to numerous countries. Next, we stopped by a company specializing in manufacturing faucets and kitchen and bathroom attachments. It also purchases most of its raw materials from inside the country. Like many we have seen at the event, this company has created many job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it uses the latest machinery to make high-quality products that compete with foreign brands. Now, many might not think twice about it, but Iran's faucet and fixture production have been booming. So we spoke with another company that has been exporting these items for years.
Industry participants say this year's Building Expo was much larger than last year's, meaning that Iran's construction industry has expanded in recent years, displaying the country's various existing and emerging capabilities in the field. Statistics show that last year some 900 domestic companies participated in the event. Also, foreign companies were present, offering their goods and services.
This year's exhibit hosted hundreds of foreign companies from Germany, Australia, Turkey, China, Spain, Italy, South Korea, and Malaysia, just to name a few. A wealth of products were showcased at the expo, from road and construction equipment to stones, sanitary supplies, heating and cooling systems, lifts and elevators, and so much more. Rarely has any industry offered so much versatility and variety of products as the construction industry. Events like this one offer a platform for the exchange of ideas, examining markets and opportunities for collaboration to create new products needed in the market. Next, we stopped by a display for a company specializing in making various inset kitchen products. We asked them about their goods and approach to challenges posed by the US sanctions. Walking through the exhibit, we ran into a company that makes metal fittings for stairs, windows, and areas that require spatial separations.
All things considered, the construction sector has been significant for the Iranian economy. The sector is divided into 2 main parts: government infrastructure projects and the housing industry. The construction industry has been thriving due to national and international investment to the extent that it is now one of the largest in the West Asia region.
This sector suffered a lot after the US withdrew from the 2015 deal and reimposed sanctions against Iran. These measures choked construction materials imports. As a result, the steady flow of things like metals to Iran was seriously hampered and eventually halted altogether. But despite the bans, this industry continues to grow and is also one of the few that exports services to other countries. Based on the Association of Iranian Exports of Technical and Engineering Services, Iran currently has the potential to export engineering services worth $40 billion annually. The country already exports these services to countries around the Caspian Sea, its bordering neighbors, South and Central America, North Africa, and South Asia. Some construction projects include sewage treatment plants, dams, and energy plants. According to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran is self-sufficient in construction material production. Steel, glass, and cement are abundantly produced in the country. Moreover, the surplus of these items is exported to countries worldwide. Government officials say they have plans to expand exports to Iran's trade partners, including China and Russia. For example, the Ministry of Industry, Mine and Trade says it plans to sell upwards of $3 billion worth of construction materials to Russia alone. As a whole, the government views the construction sector as a feasible alternative for generating foreign revenues and diversifying the country's economy away from oil profits. And now it's time for me to take a quick break and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who has prepared an exciting report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find distress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how,
and what. Why is to define the problem? How is the process towards the solution? And what is the final product and prototype? These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space. All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is a phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose this felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I've been Sarah Dema.
We're almost near the end of our program, but before we go, let's take a look at some news and trends on industrial parks and other related traits. As the number of industrial parks in the country grows, so does the maintenance cost of these areas. Iran's Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization, or ISIPO, says over half of these parks are in need of renovation.
The organization says around 60% of the country's industrial parks are over 15 years old and need maintenance and overhauls. Based on official figures, nearly 50,000 industrial units have started their activities in these parks. However, the ISIPO says it is limited in how much help it can provide these industrial areas to effectively maintain them. The organization says the government needs to give it more authority to do so. Iran's industrial parks play a critical role in making the country independent by boosting production in a bid to nullify the U.S.-imposed sanctions on the economy.
Summertime is usually the season where electricity consumption reaches its peak. But unfortunately, that's also when most power cuts happen. So Tehran province officials have now devised a solution to prevent blackouts in industrial parks.
After a brainstorming session, provincial officials have decided to set up several solar power stations to provide a steady supply of electrical power during peak use periods. The power stations will generate up to 1,200 megawatts of electricity for the country's power grid. Plus, these stations will help supply electricity to 19 of the province's industrial parks, where some 6,000 businesses are operating. This solution comes after the Energy Ministry devised a plan to systematically cut off electricity supply to industrial parks during peak use. This program aimed to manage the capital's electricity supply and prevent blackouts for household consumers.
And our last news topic covers Iran's deepening ties with its neighbor, Turkmenistan. The two countries have recently inked a memorandum of understanding.
Under the deal, Iran's ISIPO has agreed to share experience and transfer knowledge related to developing industrial parks to the Turkmen side. These include design, engineering, and consultations for setting up industrial towns in special economic zones. Other topics in the MOU include bolstering entrepreneurship and developing small industries and tech parks. The two sides also signed several other cooperation documents during a visit of Turkmenistan's president to Iran.
That wraps up our program for today. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in.
When your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this part of Ziyarat al-Ashura. وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ آلَ زِيَادٍ وَآلَ مَرْوَانٍ. May Allah distance from His mercy the clan of Ziyad and the clan of Marwan. We sufficiently discussed who Ziyad was, his father, where he was born, and what history revealed us about his lifetime and his atrocities. And now, in the previous episode, we started introducing Marwan ibn Hakam. We said that Marwan and his father Hakam, they were both banished. And they were called in a tradition as Tarid ibn Tarid, or also Wazagh ibn al-Wazagh. So we have a very stern narrations about Hakam, but perhaps the most stern one about Hakam is this report narrated from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. He says, "إِذَا رَأَيْتُمْ الْحَكَمْ إِبْنَ أَبِي الْعَاسِ وَلَوْ تَحْتَ أَسْتَارِ الْكَعْبَةِ فَاقْتُلُوهُ." If you see Hakam ibn As behind even the curtains of Kaaba, kill him. This is what has been reported in Biharul Anwar of Allama Majlisi in the 33rd volume. But the son, Marwan, is reported to have lived in Taif until one of the relatives came to power, and that relative spent money lavishly for him and appointed him a minister, married him his daughter, and entrusted to him all the political affairs, though he was devoid of any correct political vision. There is this tradition from Abu Huraira, which is reported to have said that the Apostle of Allah saw in his dream that the progeny of Hakam are ascending on his pulpit and descending. Thereupon he angrily said, "I saw Bani al-Hakam jumping over my pulpit like monkeys." And when Marwan was Muawiyah's governor over Medina, he would vilify Ali every Friday on the pulpit. So Imam Hassan alayhi salam said to him, "Indeed, Allah cursed your father through the tongue of his prophet while you were still in his loins." The Prophet sallallahu said, "May Allah curse Hakam and whom he bears."
When people ask, "I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right," go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, "I'm confused," say, "Please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion." You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is: do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates Him. He understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, brothers and sisters, this Marwan is also known by another name in the history books. He is also known as Ibn al-Zarqa due to his grandmother, Az-Zarqa bint Wahab, who was a well-known prostitute of her time. In one of his stern encounters with Marwan, Imam Hussein alayhi salam draws his attention to his degenerate descent and says, "Yabna Az-Zarqa ad-da'iya ila nafsiha bisuqi 'ukkaz." O product of Zarqa, who would call others towards herself in the market of 'Ukkaz. It is reported that when Yazid came to power, he sent a letter to Walid ibn Utbah, his governor in Medina, to seek oath of allegiance from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He also said that if Imam Hussein alayhi salam were to refuse, then Walid should behead him. Walid consulted Marwan for advice on this, and Marwan said, "Innahu la yubayi'." Indeed, he will not give the oath of allegiance. وَلَوْ كُنْتُ مَكَانَكَ لَضَرَبْتُ عُنُقَهُ. If I were in your place, I would behead him. Brothers and sisters, this is what comes from the hatred against the Ahlul Bayt. Anyway, therefore Walid, who was in the company of Marwan, summoned Imam Ali salam to convey to him Yazid's message and seek from him the oath of allegiance. Imam Ali salam came to Walid with 30 of his men. Walid informed the Imam of Muawiyah's death and then sought his oath of allegiance, whereupon Imam said, إِنَّ الْبَيْعَةَ لَا تَكُونُ سِرًّا فَإِذَا دَعُوتَ النَّاسَ غَدًا فَادْعُنَا مَعَهُ. Indeed, the oath of allegiance does not transpire in private. So when you call the people tomorrow, invite us with them too. And Marwan, in his devilish nature, said, لا تقبل أيها الأمير عذرا. O Amir, do not accept his excuse. If he pays his oath of allegiance now, well and good, otherwise behead him right now. Hearing this, Imam Hussein alayhi salam reprimanded Marwan and said, وَيْلٌ لَكَ يَبْنَ الزَّرْقَاءِ أَنْتَ تَأْمُرُ بِضَرْبِ عُنُقِي كَذِبْتَ وَاللَّهِ وَلَأُمْتَ. Woe be unto you, O son of Zarqa, you command to sever my head? By Allah, you cannot do that and you are degenerate. And addressing Walid, Imam said, أَيُّهَا الْأَمِيرُ إِنَّا أَهْلُ بَيْتِ النُّبُوَّةِ وَمَعْدِنُ الرِّسَالَةِ وَمُخْتَلَفِ الْمَلَائِكَةِ بِنَا فَتَحَ اللَّهُ وَبِنَا خَتَمَ اللَّهُ. O Amir, we are the household of the Prophet, the minefield of apostleship, the place where angels frequent. And by Allah, Yazid is an open sinner, wine drinker, slayer of innocent souls and displayer of sin. So who is like me cannot pay an oath of allegiance to who is like him. مِثْلِي لَا يُبَايَعْ مِثْلَهُ. I assume that's enough for this episode. Dear listeners, we ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.